Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson. Now we're back at a farmer's market, and we're not at just any farmer's market. We're at one of the top farmer's markets, I think, in the state of California, maybe in the nation. It's in Aptos. But the executive director of this farmer's market, not just this one, it covers some others as well, is Catherine Barr. Catherine, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, explain to people what makes this Aptos Farmers Market. What's unique about the Aptos Farmers Market?
I think what's really unique about the Aptos Farmers Market is that we have multi-generation farmers here. So it's kind of, you know, it's getting back to what farms and farmers markets were all about, and that's the family farm. And so you can go and talk to the person that is growing your food, and you can also talk to the next generation coming up who's growing your food. So I think that's really unique and different these days.
Well, you know, one thing I notice is that they sometimes come from a ways away. I mean,
yes.
You have a lot that are right here.
Right.
But then you've got some that are must be getting up at 4 in the morning to drive here from other parts of
they
the
are.
State.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, most of our vendors, we have about 100 farm families that belong to the organization. 75% of them are from the Tri-County area, which is Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito County. 25% come from other areas, counties in California. And it's because of the different climates that California has that we have the great peaches and the great figs, you know, from the valley. You know, we can grow some of that here, but not in the volume that they can go ahead and bring to us. So,
well, you know, I noticed something this morning,
yeah.
And that as I was walking around, I saw some people I know.
Uh-huh.
And that's fun. It's always just a great
yep.
community. But the other thing, I was overhearing languages from other countries,
yes.
And that there are people that must be tourists or they're here
yep.
seeing friends, and they're wandering through, and I overheard somebody that kind of with Italian and back and forth in English,
yeah.
sounding like this reminded them of home.
Yes.
You run into that?
We do run into that a lot. And in fact, a lot of our farmers, we have somebody who speaks Dutch, somebody who speaks Italian, Portuguese, you know, of course, the Spanish. I mean, they're from all over, you know. So, I mean, it's kind of food is kind of a international language, if you want to call it that. And I think that's kind of great. So, yeah, I'm glad that they can say that this reminds them of home.
Now, your market is one of the kind of unusual ones in that you're year-round.
We are year-round. And because, again, the multi-climates that California has, we can go ahead and do that. And we've only been year-round probably for the last 25 years. This market is celebrating its 40th year this year.
I didn't even think farmers markets were being called farmers markets
yes.
40 years ago.
Yes, back in 1976. And
well,
there was four farmers that got together to start this Aptos farmers market. Three of them still participate in the market today.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, they're all in their 80s, but, you know, that's great. You know, I hope hopefully they'll die in their field, you know, so that's
they're
great.
They're outstanding in their
you
field.
You betcha.
For the old pun. But back at the time when this was formed, then there must not have been more than a handful across the nation, I would
there,
guess.
There were not. Now, back in 1976, there were probably maybe about 20 to 25 farmers markets in the state of California. Now there's over 850.
That's
remarkable.
Well, and I think there's 8,600
in the United States. Yeah.
Now, the other trend is that areas, I understand, that don't have the seasonal advantages
yeah.
you have are still starting to go year-round by moving inside
sure.
and also having hoops and other ways that
yes.
they can produce even vegetables yeah. in the middle of the winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do that. There's a couple people that do hoop houses as well. Yeah, it's really, again, like I say, we're living in a perfect climate, perfect area. Yeah. California has got it going on, let me tell you that. And it's really nice that we can go ahead and do year-round. You're not going to see, you know, things that you'll see maybe like peaches, of course, in January and February. But, you know, we try to teach our customers to eat seasonally. And
well, I got a question on that.
Sure.
Is there any possibility that for some of these to start even canning and starting to offer preserved products so
yeah.
that they can go beyond the peak season? So you've loved a certain
yep.
whatever it is, but they start having it even at the farmer's market in jars
yeah.
or...
We do that. There's a couple people that do, we have somebody does Brussels sprouts. There's going to be somebody that's going to be canning tomatoes, the dilly beans, you know, which is really very popular, pickles, you know, cucumbers. And we do offer classes on that. Once a month, we have somebody that comes in and they'll do either a cooking demonstration or tomato canning or jamming and so forth, because it's very popular around
here. So we might expect to see buy the fresh product, some cans and jars in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Why not? That we call that added value product for our farmers.
Well, what else might you observe? That what's been a change over these last few years? That what's been the most remarkable difference or change in farmers' markets in the current time?
In the current time, I think in the past, in 1976, there wasn't really anybody to kind of oversee what farmers' markets were about. Now we do have somebody who oversees, which is our California Agricultural Department. And I think it's really kind of good because, number one, it keeps the farmers honest. And number two, it keeps the integrity of what farmers' markets were for. So I really see that because I've been here for 24 years. So I have kind of seen, you know, the peddlers kind of leaving farmers' markets and the real farmers coming in to take over. So,
well, that's exciting. Yeah. And then just one more thing, looking down the road, I mean, what are the kinds of things that you're getting excited about as you
retirement.
Don't retire. There's no such thing. But beyond that, so what about in the next few years? What do you see coming that's down the pike that's intriguing?
Okay, I think, you know, a lot of the farmers are going back to the heirloom varieties. You know, these are things that grandma and grandpa might have, you know, had on their little family plot and so forth. So I think that's going to be kind of the new trend. And, you know, people are getting really smart as far as where their food is coming from. So I think we're going to see a really savvy, you know, customer really wanting to have those heirloom varieties coming back. So, you know, watch for that.
Well, you know, that makes people think, okay, this is just for rich people. I mean, because it's heirloom, you think of it being higher priced. But another interesting development that you have is that people are able to come now and purchase with SNAP and other programs.
Sure.
How does that work?
Okay, we have an information booth, and they go ahead and they bring us their little card, and we go ahead and give them tokens where there are, you know, any of the farmers will go ahead and take them.
So they're able to come in and purchase fruits and vegetables with what was used to be called food stamps, but their various programs.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
And are there a significant number of people that take advantage of that?
Not particularly in this Aptos market. You know, we do have that service for people. We do have a few, not very many, which is unfortunate.
Now, one other thing, that in some markets they're subsidizing that there's matches available so that if somebody goes in and they get like a, you know, for $10 worth of fruits and vegetables,
we
they get
match
another
it for $10. Yeah.
Oh, you do that too?
No, we will be doing that. Yeah.
We
will be doing that. It's just we have put in our application for that, but we have not heard yet.
So one would think that not only will that be good for the people that want to eat better and also, you know, buy from a farmer's market, but it's got to be good for the farmers too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, any kind of great programs like that, we're welcome to do. So
now, one other thing, and I'm going to wrap up and let you get back to the market, which is bustling here. If people need to come and visit this market and some of your other markets as well. Oh, somebody's just shouting over your shoulder saying it's because of the way you run it. And it is somebody, I should point out, that's filling their trunk with fruits and vegetables. And they're just getting started. So
she needs to be writing a book or out on the lecture circuit about how to build a market and how to run a market.
Well, why? Why do you say that? I mean, I can guess that
because
it's
I have
a good
friends
job.
All over the country who will go to these crappy, half-assed, screwed-up farmers markets.
And this one's not.
This one's wonderful.
Do write a book, then.
Well, do write a book. Okay,
I went up to Felton. I mean, every time I go to Felton, it's like, in 10 minutes, Catherine could straighten out a whole bunch of stuff here. I mean, it's a nice, cute little market, and it's useless.
I think we're just starting a new opportunity here on the podcast. It could be like LinkedIn for
That's
farmers
right,
market
exactly.
managers.
Yeah. Ask me questions, and I'll let you know. How about that?
Well, listen, you're doing a great job
here,
and I've got my bag full. I'm going to go get a few more.
Okay.
But really appreciate it, and thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised that a popular and highly regarded farmers market like the Aptos Farmers Market at Cabrillo College would have visionary farmer leaders, have a respected professional market manager, and multi-generational farmers. What about the shoppers? Well, now join me as we roam through the market to see and hear what's happening. Okay, we're at the Aptos Farmers Market. Met a nice couple here at the cheese shop, and we started talking about pesto. Could you introduce yourself?
My name is Mike Delfava, and my lovely wife, Denise Delfava.
Hi, welcome.
Hi.
Well, I should say when we were all guests here in the middle of a farmer's market. We were standing at the cheese shop, and you started, I overheard you saying that you're shopping for making your own pesto. Explain that. I mean, you got a bag full of stuff already, and what's the story?
We normally come to this time of year to the farmer's market. We normally make two trips, and we make like three or four quarts of pesto, and then we freeze it over the winter.
Oh my, that's one. You know, I always wondered. It seems to me like such a waste when we come to the farmer's markets. All the stuff that's fresh, and then it's gone.
Yeah,
and you can't enjoy the flavors. But you're really capturing it. So you're getting the basil at its peak of freshness.
Yes.
And then what are the other products that you're getting?
I'll give you our recipe. Our recipe is 4 cups of basil, 1/2 cup of toasted almonds, 1/2 cup of grated cheese, and it can be Reggiano, Parmesan, or the Gouda here that we tasted. It's whatever you like, because I believe you don't cook what you don't like. You always cook what you like. And then we have for that we have about 2 to 3 garlic cloves. And then we use enough olive oil to bring it to the consistency we like, and we like it a little bit more thick than some people do. But again, that's a personal preference.
So you got all those ingredients, and you put them all together, you mix them all. You grind them, or they?
We use a food processor. I have done it by hand, but we use a food processor because it's a little bit more efficient.
Now, is there a cooking stage in that then, after you've got them all?
No,
it's fresh.
It's fresh. We do it all fresh. And what we do also is we'll make the quart all at once, and then we put it in a container, and then we season the whole thing at once with salt and pepper and maybe a splash or two of vinegar.
So that way you have
consistency.
Now, do you have to add additional garlic?
The garlic you can put to your, it's a taste, whatever your palate dictates.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. And then now you... How is this preserved then? After you,
we put it. We go to get the what size are they?
They're little like half pint containers.
Right.
We just fill them up on their freezer proof.
Uh-huh.
And so we just fill those up. The first go around, we usually have to give most of what we make away to our family and friends. But the second time, we just take all of those little half pints and we put them in the freezer. One family member actually puts her portion in little ice cube trays and just pops one out whenever she wants to use something with pesto.
Oh, that sounds good. Well, I'm too old to be adopted, so maybe I can become your friend now.
Yes,
that
you
we've
can.
Done a podcast.
Yes, you can.
Because it sounds wonderful. So you can put them in the freezer. You can pull them out anytime. When you do, then what's your favorite way of using it after you take the pesto?
We do two things. We mix a couple tablespoons in with mayonnaise. So we have like a pesto mayonnaise, and that's really good on turkey or chicken sandwiches, like right after Thanksgiving.
Right, right.
The other thing we do is we grow cherry tomatoes on our deck hydroponically, and we dry those out in the oven, and we serve it pesto over pasta with some of those dried cherry tomatoes, and that's just...
Oh, that sounds absolutely... Absolutely fantastic. And so, anyway, that just can't be beat. I'll tell you what, though, if I could cook like it sounds like you folks do, I don't know if I'd ever go out.
Well, you know, let's be honest, the best Italian restaurant in the county is at our house.
Oh, it's, you know, hang a sign. I think we've got a few listeners that are ready to come over.
Well, I'll bet you're ready to try to make that pesto recipe or go to a restaurant that does something similar with food they've sourced at the farmer's market. Great farmers markets like this one in Aptos, California, are frequented by discerning chefs that are trying to modify their menus in different ways based on what they find at the farmers market. We found one of those chefs, Mark Denham, who's highly regarded chef at Swaff Restaurant and Wine Bar, who's worked in the best kitchens around the West Coast. He's here early, along with a lot of other chefs that are going around and starting to put together what they're going to be having.
Well, if you're here early on a Saturday morning, you probably had a late Friday night. How do you get yourself up and around to get to a farmer's market this early? And you got a cart. I'm going to ask you to describe what you're pulling through here and picking up at the market. But is it kind of hard to jump out first thing Saturday morning and hit the farmer's markets?
It's usually no. If I get up and get coffee and get going in the morning, I know I'm not the first here. I know there's other chefs who get here quite earlier. But as I was telling you earlier, I don't necessarily come here looking for specifics because I can come and buy the things that appeal to me at the time. I can stroll in here a little later than others.
So this morning you got a cart here and you got some blackberries and strawberries, and so you're just rolling down here, and what, something strikes you that you're going to create something on the menu, or do you have an idea already of something you're looking for your menu?
Half and half. Sometimes there's very specific needs we have. Sometimes we put something on the menu that's extremely popular that we're kind of, our hands are tied and we're forced to continue to run. So I'll swing by Route 1 in a minute and pick up Little Gem lettuces, because that's what everyone seems to love.
What kind of lettuce?
Little Gems.
Oh,
they're like a
okay.
baby romaine, and we're doing them this evening with a Caesar-like salad dressing made with poached local albacore.
So when you do that, like, I've been to your restaurant before. It's a great restaurant.
Thank you.
And love the wine and the appetizers. But people don't know you're coming up with new things all the time. And
yeah, we print the menu daily. We don't necessarily completely change the menu daily, but we run specials. And then sometimes, by hook or by crook, we make changes. For example, I've been running corn with salmon, and I can't find corn this morning. So there's a possibility that it might change tonight as well. So it's, like I said, it's about half and half. Sometimes I come with very specific ideas in mind, but I've long since learned that if you're going to buy from the market, you got to be flexible. So,
well, and in being flexible, then you get this, and you come here, you've got your concepts. Do you find that your customers want to hear the stories? Do you tell them which farms they came from?
Oh, sure, certainly. We have a lineup every day before service, in which we explain to the waiters what the dishes are and where the stuff comes from, and they're pretty savvy and they're familiar with all the farms as well. So it's not news to them that we're buying from Blue Heron Farms or from whomever, you know, whether it's Rodoni with our Brussels sprouts or the things that the farm specialize in. They're pretty familiar with them all.
Now, is it all certified organic?
Most everyone is. If they're not, then they're never, never. Mm-hmm. Or they haven't gone through the certification process, but they don't ever use chemicals or pesticides and such.
Is that what never, never means?
Well, it's a term that everyone uses, including meat producers who say they never use antibiotics in their meat stuff. They call it never,
right.
never.
And, right.
Yeah.
Well, now, when you fill this in at the farmer's market, do you go to more than one farmer's market a week?
Yes, I go to the Wednesday downtown market. That's right around the corner from where we're located. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturdays, I hit both this market at Cabrillo, and I go to the west side as well.
I go to both of them as well, too. I don't know for sure why. I think it's because they've got more food I can eat up at the West Side Market. This is the biggest market. It's supposed to be the top market, and they're one of the top markets in the state of California. But my complaint is there's not many places you can get, like, egg tacos or things here.
Yeah, the taco stand's pretty good over there. But I go specifically because Live Earth Farms out of Watsonville has a stand there.
Yes.
That are not here in Cabrillo, as well as Happy Boy. And we buy specific items from both of them.
Now, have you been out to their farms, too? I mean, some of these that you go to regularly, have you, other than picking them up at the farmer's market, do you ever go out and visit them at their farms?
Yeah, on occasions we do events with farmers. I haven't been out recently to anybody. I've kind of been chained to the stoves recently. But I know that they do welcome people and visitors and sometimes hold events where they have groups of people out there and such, yeah.
Well, you're kind of slow down this morning, and I know you've got more things to load up on. As you head down through the rest of these aisles at the farmer's market, something else you got in mind that you're really chasing this morning?
Keeping my fingers crossed on corn somewhere. Happy Boy has it, but they usually sell out by the time I hit the west side. The other thing that I'll be looking for is purple cauliflower.
Ah, has that become very popular now?
It's usually grown in small batches by only a handful of people, but we do a cauliflower dish on the menu right now, in which I like having a large variety. So I'll have the white, the cheddar, the orange colored, and the purple, and occasionally the Romanesco or green colored.
I'm guessing that you've been a chef even before farmers markets got this popular. Are you finding that the farmers market, is it displacing the large suppliers, or do you still have to use them and integrate the farmers markets?
There's
supply?
Always going to be things, you know, we just started our bar program, so we're serving cocktails now, which require a lot of citrus and such that aren't in prime season locally, so we have to buy commercial citrus, for example, for some of the drinks. I mean, you want a nice, pretty green wedge of lime in your gin and tonic, that's going to have to come from a commercial market. So there's a handful of things that we still have to buy just by necessity. Think of all the basics that go into stocks, like, you know, carrots, onions, and celery. There'll be times in which you come to the market and there won't be any of those three items available. But for the most part, we pretty much replaced, I would say, 85 to 90% of everything that we purchase for the restaurant. We purchase now through the farmers markets in terms of produce and fruit.
Well, then a quick wrap up then. If you've talked about all the food and we understand those things, and then the bar too, you're using some produce, I would imagine.
Certainly,
in your
yes.
Bar,
They're using jalapenos in a spicy drink. They're using strawberries, which I just purchased for them, as well as fresh lavender and all sorts of fun things are going in the drinks right now.
I think of your restaurant as a wine bar initially, but I would imagine you're using some craft brew beer too. Is that
sure,
right?
Sure. We've got Santa Adrias on tap, among others. Yes.
Yeah. So it all ties into more and more of that is also getting, some unusual grains that are being used for some of those.
Certainly, hey. I buy a blue tinged Ethiopian emmer grain from Koch Farms, as well as their Red Floriani ground polenta. So they're doing really cool grains out in San Juan Bautista that we buy and have on the menu right now.
Well, what an exciting story. It's still early in the morning when we're doing this podcast, but I'm anxious to come by. Hey, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Appreciate your talking to us on Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining the Farm to Table Talk podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to listen regularly on SoundCloud or iTunes to Farm to Table Talk.